Everyone. Judge Conklin.
Yep, present.
Ms. Fleming.
Present.
Judge Bradshaw.
Yes.
Judge Bowen. Let's see. Okay, Judge Clark. Judge Dulcich.
She informed us she has to attend the another exec meeting, and so she won't be available with us today.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Judge Emedy.
I'm here.
Thank you. Judge Jessner.
Here.
Judge Kamakarian.
Here, present.
Thank you. Judge Kelly.
Here, thank you.
Judge Rogan. I see your name listed. Judge Rogan.
Here.
Thank you. Judge Santenhu.
Present. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Judge Young. Ms. Beaker.
Here.
Ms. Cameron.
Here.
Mr. Chatters.
I am here, thank you.
Mr. Finke.
Here.
Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Mr. Roddy. Mr. Rule.
Here.
Mr. Slayton.
I'm here.
Ms. Turner.
Here.
Thank you. And Mr. Yamasaki.
Yes, good afternoon, President.
Thank you, Mr. Masaki. Mr. Theodorovich.
I'm here.
And Judge Owani. Okay,
all right.
That is everyone, Judge Conklin.
Great. Thanks so much, Maria. Appreciate that. Looks like we've got the significant majority of our crowd present. So welcome all. Well, welcome to 2026. And the start, it's not the start of a new budget year for us, but we're well into that. But the start of a new year, I do welcome and appreciate all of your help on this committee. Couple things, just preliminary matters. I would invite a motion to approve the minutes of the October 29th meeting that are in your materials at page 4. Is there a motion?
Rogan moves approval.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second. Callan Carrion.
Moved and second. Those minutes be approved. Having a moment for everyone to pause. Any opposition to that motion? Hearing, seeing no opposition, the minutes are deemed unanimously approved. Now, and as a new element of these meetings that we welcome, we now have available public comment of these meetings. And I'm told we have two speakers today. They're both speaking remotely, which obviously is efficient and effective, and we welcome those comments. Given the amount of work we have to do today to each of you, we've extended our typical practice is 2 minutes, but we're going to extend this to each of you for 3 minutes, considering there's only two speakers today. As a suggestion, you have a timer right in front of you. When you see that your time gets down to about 20 or 30 seconds left, as a suggestion, that's a good time to sort of wrap up your comments. We'll do our best to let you get everything done within 3 minutes, but I'm sure you understand how important it is we remain on schedule. We do welcome those comments. And first, I'm going to invite Katie Jo, the Chief Executive Officer of the Dependency Advocacy Center, to make her comments. She's confirmed she's present. I note right now you're muted, so be sure to unmute before you speak.
Thank you, and good afternoon, honorable members of TICBAC. As was previously stated, my name is Katie Jo. I am the Chief Executive Officer of Dependency Advocacy Center in Santa Clara County. We represent parents and some minors in Santa Clara County's dependency court system. And I'm here today speaking alongside my colleague, Sabrina Alaguire from San Francisco County. Ms. Alaguire and I are here today speaking on behalf of a statewide coalition of dependency counsel, court-appointed counsel providers, which consists of a representative cross-section of small, medium, and large counties, as well as both organizational and panel providers. Although our needs vary across size, geography, and structure, we share a collective voice as practitioners who are dedicated to high quality representation for every family facing dependency court intervention. At this juncture, we firmly believe that high quality representation requires a more accurate assessment of our funding needs and a roadmap to securing increased funding for the lawyers who represent families in California. We want to begin our comments with appreciation for the Funding Methodology Subcommittee and their focus on reviewing the Dependency Council funding methodology, and in particular for creating a working group to consider and implement modifications to the Dependency Council funding formula. We were very heartened at the last subcommittee meeting to hear their investment in making changes that are responsive to our unmet needs, which have yet to be captured in the current funding formula. Our dependency providers have reviewed the formula ourselves, consulted amongst one another, and arrived at specific recommendations shared by providers in most, if not all, of our counties. And our hope and request of TICBAC is that as this work continues, we will be able to share our recommendations through participation in the work group. Thank you again for your time today, and I will pass on to Ms. Alaguire.
Great. Well, you were well within your three, if not your two, so we appreciate that. But we will pass it along as noted to Ms., and I want to make sure, Alaguire, is that correct?
Yes, yes, it is. Thank you so much.
The 3 minutes are yours. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Zabrina Alaguire, the Dependency Representation Manager from the Bar Association of San Francisco. I am honored to be speaking with Ms. Joe on behalf of our statewide legal providers for children and their parents in juvenile dependency court today. In response to today's materials, we want to express real gratitude to the Judicial Council staff and TICBAC for prioritizing calculating the unspent court-appointed Dependency Council funds for this fiscal year and for processing the reallocation to us providers so expeditiously. Thank you also for including Dependency Council funding and our workload assessment in the Judicial Branch BCPs for submission to the Department of Finance for consideration to the Governor's budget for this next fiscal year. And additionally, we are grateful for Dependency Council funding being included among the funding priorities and budget change concept proposals for consideration for fiscal year 2027-28. We appreciate very much the three counties who listed our funding issue as priority number one or number two in the trial court funding priorities for 27-28. Court-appointed dependency attorney funding has not been included in the BCP in approximately a decade, and so we are pleased to see that it made this initial list. We do encourage the committee to indeed include this item in the BCP, and given the planned work before TICBAC to revise our funding methodology, now is indeed the time to prepare for a budget change. It is very forward-thinking to include our methodology improvements in the BCP for fiscal year 27-28, because it will be the natural culmination of the work that the funding methodology subcommittee is pursuing. So thank you very much for including our voice and our input at every stage.
Efficient and effective. Thank you very much for those comments. We appreciate that. I just want to make sure, Maria, those are the only two notified public speakers, correct?
That is correct.
Great. Okay. So we've concluded our public speaking with the thanks to those speakers. Turning now to the additional business at hand. I just want to take care of a few other administrative matters. And the first is, Judge Young, have you joined us yet today? There he
is. Good afternoon, everyone. I am now with you. I just got off the bench. Thank you for your patience. I just caught up on public comments. So thank you.
Judge Young, along with Judge Dulcich, are our two newest members. We thank you very much, Judge Young. We're very used to that. We do our best to start right at noon. But as we commonly say, we recognize we all have day jobs too. So don't do anything that would interrupt your regular routine to get to our meeting, but we appreciate your presence. As I noted before, Judge Dulcich, many of us are aware of Judy. She has other commitments today, including executive committee meetings, and so she cannot join us at this meeting, but sends her regards. So we've got a full slate of business this afternoon, including considering a recommendation for 1 year suspension of the minimum operating and emergency fund balance, three items for mid-year allocations, including one that was just referred to. And then finally, we'll conclude with the discussion of our budget change concepts. We're going to flip the script a little bit today, folks. Zlatko has another hard commitment at 1:30 that he has to get to. And his comments concerning the governor's budget will sort of lay a nice foundation for our BCC discussion. So to accommodate both those goals, we'll start with Zlatko and a summary of at least the start of the governor's budget proposal. Zlatko?
Yes, thank you, Judge Konkon. I appreciate it. It's always good to be here and talk about the budget as it is proposed. As hopefully many of you or all of you were able to join the call that happened on Friday, in which Shelley and I went over the budget. I would say is that it's a good start for us, given what we were worried about in terms of the structural imbalance that was already known when the budget of that we currently have in 2025 was passed in June. Yes, we had reported, over the course of the fall that revenues were better than anticipated, but still had lots of pressures. And you see that in the budget presentation from the governor. We were very, happy about the $70 million that's been included for the trial courts, no reductions to the branch budget. But also, not some important investments that we had advanced this time last year regarding equity. We know our facilities area was an important area of continued need outside of some specific needed projects. No broad funding for facility modifications or utilities. And so that's continued to be a squeeze for us. The issues that, are facing the trial courts as it relates to language access. We know we had a BCP there. And I know that'll be certainly part of the conversation this afternoon, excuse me. This is just as Judge Konkon said, is the beginning. And the governor didn't speak much about the budget at the State of the State on Thursday. His budget director, Joe Stephenshaw, though, did. And spoke about the differences between the legislative analysts' estimates of a growing deficit versus the shrinking deficit that it was shown in the budget documents of almost just $3 billion. So quite a gap. And that's been a subject of sort of extensive conversation since the budget was released last week, is this gap and why it exists. And whereas the legislative analyst assumed some level of economic downturn as the revenues have been driven by our artificial intelligence investments and the markets that we rely so heavily upon for capital gains have been making money for folks, they expect that can't continue at the current level. And so they had a decline in revenues throughout the forecast period, notwithstanding the increase that we've seen. The governor does not have that as part of the framework of the budget. And that's been something that's been brought to fore in terms of the forefront as far as great concerns. And the legislative analysts just issued their views of the budget and are concerned. And the director, even noted that the difference could be upwards of $30 billion if things turn badly. So May revision will be an important point. And every day we'll be watching the market and seeing where things go. And the markets, were down the last couple of days and they're a little bit up today. And obviously it's you want to see where the trends are going. But for us, it's in a good space. Given all the factors, but if, as Shelley mentioned on Friday, the budget of a couple of years ago didn't include even the CPI type increase for us. It was very flat, and then May revision came with a significant pivot by the administration on budget structure. So that's when the $97 million came to the trial courts and almost 8% proposed reductions to the rest of the state judiciary. So we need to be ready and we need to be mindful. We're going to do a great job this spring defending the budget and its proposal, for the $70 million. But there's things beyond our control that, will drive the overall budget structure. I look at the multi-year budget problem. And in fact, though, the budget, finds balance because they rely on reserves and the increased revenues, it's structurally imbalanced in the current year, and that imbalance grows to a greater value, I think, of almost $26 billion when you get to 27, 28. And so it's that's concerning as we're dwindling our reserves down at the state level. And so the multi-year view is not any better. And that's the LAO's view, is that we have a structural problem, not just a sort of temporal revenue issue. We've committed as a state to a lot of expenditures. Obviously, the federal actions have, you know, exacerbated those kinds of issues. So again, I want us to be cautious about where we're going. And, you know, we will be ready to pivot as needed. But for now, it is a positive budget. And we're glad to see that, you know, the advocacy by everyone and the chief and the council and those who participated in the budget building this fall, did a good job. So maybe there's an opportunity for questions. I know maybe I want to address something. I know there's some people who were looking for monies that were in prior budgets. One question in particular was, did anything happen with Prop 36 money that was put in as a one-time over 3 years amount in the 25 budget? So you won't see changes there. But those are the kinds of things that when the budget was constructed in June, had some one-time expenditures, like for pretrial and that sort of thing, that will then now have larger reductions, anticipated reductions like in pretrial for the 26-27 fiscal year. So with that, I'll open it to questions if folks have it. I would just say, as far as while folks maybe are raising their hands or are muting, you know, as we get into this budget concept discussion, you know, I think it's important that we do demonstrate our priorities and our needs to the administration and the world. And therefore, while we know that the budget isn't looking great in the out years, there's still a need to raise our hands and show that we have ongoing needs. Whether or not the budget can address them, it's still important that we're conveying our critical needs as a branch.
Great. Thanks so much, Lako, to the work of you and budget services on a whole. I do want to make opportunity for questions before you have to go. I see David. The Davids are up. David Slayton, David Yamasaki. I'll turn to David Slayton first. David.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Thanks, Lako, for the update. Just a quick question. I know in the branch's BCP, I think, submitted for this budget, there was a request for $80 million for CPI. And I think that's sort of an estimate based upon calculated CPI. But I also know in previous years, DOF hasn't fully funded their calculated CPI to the branch. Do you know in this proposal from the governor where that fits as far as what their calculated CPI was and what they've provided to us? Is it or is it are they fully funded? So thank you.
Yeah, great question. And it's just what they could afford when it really gets down to it. And they've been, they've on and off again spoken to specifically being inflationary or not. But they know that they're reacting to the BCPs that were submitted, and we didn't have our $80 million at a rate that was published by DOF. But again, it became an affordability issue for them, and why it's there. Similar to the language access, not that it was something that they didn't think had a need, but again, limited available funds. And I think on the backdrop of the $70 million, that there's some opportunity to address other cost growth coming from that pot of funding. One thing I failed to mention, I will get to David Yamasaki, is in the LAO's report, they did not, the governor spoke to, or the director, Stephen Shaw, spoke to a small amount of discretionary funding being included, increases in the budget. In looking at the LAO's review of the proposal, they did not identify the $70 million as a discretionary amount, which I think is good news. I know it's good news for us, because what I think it finally recognizes is that this kind of adjustment isn't discretionary in the context of sort of enhancing and expanding funding, but rather paying for what is currently the level of service. Albeit we know that we've not gotten it every year, but it's still some sort of sustaining us at some level. So that's good from a policy budget perspective to see the LAO recognizing that for us.
Excellent. David Yamasaki.
Yes, thank you very much, Judge and Zlatko. I didn't weigh in during the update, but I just want to extend my thanks for the great work that everybody at the JCC and certainly the chief has done or have done to help us get what we did. It would certainly be very meaningful to all of us, and hopefully it's preserved. My question relates to, I guess, which area is more supported, although of course we have to wait and see if we get what we get here. Is it more on program funding increases, or is it more towards baseline increases? Like I would consider the inflationary adjustment more as kind of a baseline increase versus Prop 36 as a program. Is there a sense that you have of where the Department of Finance is leaning more closer to support? Again, it's we have to wait and see what happens, but just kind of a sense that you have.
Yeah, no, a good question. And I think they're driven by available resources and a balanced budget. And so we have, over the years, and you know, David, and others who have been participating in the process and supporting our BCPs, we do a great job of explaining it, but it becomes down. It's rare that it's, we don't agree with your need per se. It's often been, as of late, that there are just a lack of resources. And we also are competing against other priorities. You know, everybody knows, you know, what the governor has been speaking about. I mean, this budget speaks to a lot of education, but we've had homelessness and the environment, you know, CARE Act. So we are advocating for both. You can't build new program on a crumbling base. And so that message is there. So I think if anything, the story of, you know, that we've been trying to tell them is like, you want to keep us doing things, well, you can't erode our base. So at least from a fundamental perspective, that's been recognized in this budget. But I don't think they lean in any particular way. They lean in helping us do what we can, given the available resources.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Excellent. Zlatko, thanks again. We want to try to stay on schedule, but does anybody have any brief follow-up questions for Zlatko? And we really appreciate prefacing our meeting with those comments. That'll be a nice framework for the last item discussing BCCs for future years. But thanks again, Zlatko. Much appreciated. Good luck this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So now we get, and I want to note, just so we have a clear record, so to speak, Mike, I saw Mike Roddy jump in, and Judge Clark is still not with us. Judge Dulcich is not. But I also saw Judge, as I've acknowledged, Judge Young come in. So I think that gets our current attendance up to date.
For Judge Clark, I am here.
Oh, Judy.
Yep.
There you are. Great. I'm glad you spoke up. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I was here for the outside speakers.
Okay.
Thank you.
So now we get into the back to our schedule. We're going to get to the first item that has already been considered by FMS, and that's the trial court minimum operating and emergency fund balance. Oksana's on board to present this to us as a very brief introduction. As I think most of you are aware, this item was added in way back years ago, I think 2006, 2007. It was suspended in 2012, 2013 in lieu of other options that allow us to address savings for shortfalls and unforeseen events. But this remains a valid policy that is on our plate. So the question then becomes, how long do we continue to at least keep this policy at hand? And Oksana is going to help us to address the recommendation for this. Oksana?
Yes, thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Oksana Tak. I'm a senior analyst with Budget Services. I'm presenting today on agenda item number one, the trial court minimum operating and emergency fund balance policy, found on your materials beginning on page 6. This is a Judicial Council approved policy which directs trial courts to maintain an emergency fund balance or reserve of 5% of the first $10 million in expenditures, scaling down to 3% of expenditures over $50 million. The policy that is displayed on Attachment A on pages 11 through 15 first was established in fiscal year 2006-2007 to ensure that a reserve funding was set aside for use in emergency situations or when revenue shortfalls or budgetary imbalances might occur. The policy has been continuously suspended by the council in two-year increments, beginning in fiscal year 2012-2013. And that happened in response to advocacy efforts by the judicial branch to increase fund balance cap for the trial courts and due to the several legislative changes in statute affecting courts' fund balances. After being suspended for 14 consecutive years, the original policy became outdated and inoperable following statutory changes governing trial court reserves. At the same time, additional statewide mechanisms for emergency funding reduced the need for courts to maintain their own minimum emergency balances. At its meeting on December 18, 2025, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee considered repealing the policy due to unusually long suspension period and other means of addressing emergency situation and revenue shortages. The subcommittee also deliberated the financial and operational benefits of maintaining the policy to establish a minimum fund balance for emergencies as a best practice for the courts. Therefore, the subcommittee approved an additional one-year suspension through June 30, 2027 to allow time to revise the policy to appropriately reflect current conditions regarding the trial court financial operations and the reserve needs, and also adding this item to the Funding Methodology Subcommittee annual work plan. As this item already included in fiscal year 25-26 work plan to consider a repeal of the policy, it will be carried over to fiscal year 26-27 work plan and updated to consider revisions to the existing policy based on the current fiscal environment for the trial courts. The action must be taken before the June 30th, 2026. This is when the current suspension of the policy will expire. So the proposed recommendations are listed on page 10 of the material, and it will be considered by Judicial Branch Budget Committee and later by Judicial Council at its April 2026 business meeting. So that concludes our short presentation, and we're happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Oksana, thanks so much. And so as she has very effectively summarized, and I hate to analogize to old TV series, but Batman needs to keep this in his utility belt. So maybe something we haven't used in a while, but I don't think based upon the comments in FMS, it's something that we want to eliminate yet and therefore go back to FMS, as Oksana said, remain on the work plan so we can continue to evaluate this into mid-2027. But that's just my perhaps crude summary of the recommendation, but I open it up to any questions or comments before I ask for a vote. David Yamasaki, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, Judge. I think Ms. Tuck summarized obviously the details and the background of how long this has been suspended. But I do think, as she indicated as well, that it's a best practice. Even though we've struggled to maintain a fund balance in that range, I think we should all endeavor to try to save as much money as possible. And recognizing that we have for years tried to increase that fund balance to a higher number. I think right now, with the prospect of having a change of administration, there could be some risk by eliminating any sort of minimum fund balance. And I think preserving it, I think, is a best practice that we should try to support. And I would be happy to move approval of the recommendation as detailed on page 10 of the materials, if appropriate.
Well said, David. Thank you. I'll consider that a motion. So I don't want to deter anybody else from speaking, but is there a second to David's motion to approve the recommendation as set forth on page 10?
I'll second it, Emity.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Judge. So moved and seconded, that now gets us to the discussion phase. If there's any further discussion concerning this recommendation, I I think David did, as usual, a very effective job of summarizing what FMS's rationale was to make this recommendation. But if anybody else wants to be heard? I don't see any. It's been moved and seconded that the recommendation at page 10 be adopted and forwarded to JBBC on the time schedule set forth. Any opposition to that motion? Hearing and seeing none, as the chair, I will deem the recommendation unanimously approved. Oksana, thanks so much, as always, for your comments. Much appreciated. We're now going to move into the items separately, obviously, 2, 3, and 4. And these deal with reallocations. In one instance, an allocation. I know you're all familiar with this, but to our newer members especially, remember what TICBAC does is we allocate, we don't advocate. So that's the chief, that's Shelley, that's other entities within our branch. But once the money comes to us, we make decisions about how to allocate these funds. One of the effective tools we have is because we have to allocate early on, right? We have to get this money to the courts at the time necessary for them to make annual decisions. But we also recognize that once we make these allocations, as we move further into the fiscal year, and we're actually halfway through it now, that money might, those allocations might need to be adjusted to make effective use of those funds. So that's what we're talking about today in capsule. So the first one of those discussions about potential mid-year reallocations is for court interpreters for the fiscal year 25-26. So again, as I just said, this is not for 26-27. This is where we are right now. So we're in the middle of the 25-26 fiscal year, and we're considering the mid-year reallocation of $59,000 of current court interpreters program funds and a proposed augmentation of 19.1 for fiscal year 25-26 to anticipate funding shortfall. So we're going to ask you to consider the recommendation that we allocate and augment the funds we have from the existing funds to make sure we can continue doing this business. And I'm going to turn this over to Douglas, who is with us, and always good to see you, Douglas. It's yours.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Judge Conklin, and good afternoon, everyone. As Judge Conklin mentioned, this report presents the results of the mid-year survey of trial courts, which assess their additional funding needs for the current year under the Trial Court Trust Fund Court Interpreters Program, also known as CIP, to be met using program savings. The survey was conducted early in December rather than February, based on court feedback that additional funding was needed above the yearly allocation. 36 courts requested additional funding, totaling $19.2 million. Of the 22 courts that did not request additional funding, 3 estimated unspent funds of around $59,000. After reallocating the available $59,000, the CIP augmentation request for current year from program reserves is $19.1 million, which will leave a program savings balance of $8.7 million at the end of the current fiscal year. Following approval by TICBAC and the Judicial Branch Budget Committee, the final augmentation amount for current year must be approved by the Judicial Council, the Department of Finance, and the legislature. Staff will also be conducting an additional survey before the end of the fiscal year to identify any additional savings for reallocation. And Judge Conklin, in closing, I'll just note, as Lako said, we put in a BCP for additional funding for court interpreter services that was not included in the governor's proposed budget. So we move from one cycle to another. And I know you're going to be talking about BCCs, but I think I just wanted to highlight for the committee that we expect the remaining program reserves to be depleted in 26-27. So I'll pass it back to you.
Great, Douglas, very efficient, appreciate that. So this, for our business purposes today, is a pretty routine allocation and reallocation we consider every year. But I think Douglas has planted an appropriate seed that these funds are not limitless. And I think we're gonna have to confront, unfortunately, moving forward, other alternatives. I guess I'll just leave it at that because we don't need to open up the discussion for this issue, for this recommendation. This is simply a recommendation right now about how we keep this program so effective. With that, any questions or concerns? Jake, go ahead.
Thanks, Judge. So I have a clarification question for Douglas, and then a question, I guess two clarifications really. So the 134.75 million, excuse me, that is the ongoing funding for the program. Is that, that's right?
Mm-hmm.
I see you nodding. Okay. So the 19 or so million that we're allocating today, that is all out of the fund balance for the program.
Correct.
And that's what's being depleted. So theoretically, if there's no BCC, then in 2728, the program would be at 134.75.
Yeah, the proposed budget that came out is 135.1 million, but you're right, it's close to that amount.
Okay, so then so I guess one thing that we could consider is whether we want to allocate this full 19 million today, because that is fund balance that would not be then available into next fiscal year. It sounds like the recommendation is not to do that, but instead to allocate the, you know, the most amount possible in the current year. But that would be another option, would be to say, well, we don't want to make this decision now. And I guess that's my question. So if there's another round that's going to come later in the fiscal year,
I think
could the committee allocate half of this amount, just making up numbers, half of this mm-hmm. amount, knowing that these same courts may then be asking for that additional half of the amount in April or May when you do that second round?
Can I answer this from a technical budget process perspective? Is there's limited time for us to have this be approved by the legislature? Let's start with the Department of Finance and then the legislature. So getting into May, we may not get the opportunity to actually have it approved. So there might be some redistribution, but asking for more authority becomes a timing issue. So I think the focus of the later in the year is of what we have, either the existing plus the hopeful augmented amount, if there's then some redistribution of that, but that will still be within that amount that we are appropriated plus augmented, because we won't have, if we're that late in the fiscal year, there's 30-day waiting periods, there's legislative approvals, assuming again that the Department of Finance is seeing fit to approve it, that would make it, I think, very challenging for you to know where you are as you're closing your books from an added perspective versus just a redistribution of money that's been refined based on actual expenditures. Douglas, I kind of got a little bit into the forecasting part, but I wanted to make sure from a timing perspective, it makes it harder for all, it makes it almost impossible for us to not do as much as we can now and get that in front of the Department of Finance and the legislature in the spring.
Okay. So what we're doing here is it's one action, but it's doing two different things. So one is that it is recommending an increase of this year's expenditures out of the interpreter fund to 153.8-ish million. And that has to go through this process, the Department of Finance and others. And the legislature are approving the augment from fund balance to give expenditure authority to 153.
Correct.
We would then be saying we are allocating that 153, that additional 19 million in this way. But Douglas, what you're saying is later in the year, there'll be another request to courts, and it may be, I'm just going to pick the first one. So Ventura has because I know Kate's on here and she can respond to me. So, you know, Ventura, let's say, does not spend that 500,000, they spend 250,000. That difference is what could be reallocated. We're not then going to dip further into reserves of the fund later in the year, because there won't be time. We would just be reallocating within the 153.8 million towards the end of the fiscal year.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. I know that was very weedsy, but appreciate it.
No, it makes a lot of sense. So we need to ask now to get it. And if we get too much, I don't mean too much, but we can always reallocate, but we can't reallocate what we don't have. Okay. Any other questions? I'd invite a motion to approve the recommendations set forth in your materials.
Actually, Judge Conklin, I do have my hand up.
I didn't see that. Who was that? Judge Emity? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Julie.
It's okay, totally okay. I just wanted to express my appreciation for the early survey. It's very helpful for us to be able to know where we're going to end up. It resolves a lot of uncertainty and helps us to avoid taking some pretty drastic action without because we would have the uncertainty. So I just really appreciate all the effort that went into and the work that went into doing it early.
Thank you.
I'm glad I saw your hand up. Thank you very much for that. That's a very appropriate comment. Thanks. Beyond that appreciation, any additional comments? And I'd invite, therefore, a motion to approve the recommendation at page 21.
Judge Clark, I'll make a motion to approve the recommendation on page 21.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Judge Kelly.
I heard a lot of voices. Who am I giving credit to?
Judge Kelly.
Judge Kelly with David Yamasaki's close second. All right, moved and seconded the recommendation set forth at page 21 be approved. It's now open for final discussion. Any additional comments or discussion? I want to make sure I haven't missed a hand. I think everybody's had an opportunity. Any opposition to the motion to approve the recommendation set forth at page 21? Hearing seeing none, as the chair, I'll deem with Rebecca's agreement as vice chair, the recommendation is unanimously approved. Thank you so much, everybody. That gets us now to another mid-year reallocation. That's for the pretrial release program. We have Deidre Benedict, who's going to help us through this as a brief summary. This is a reallocation like we just sort of talked about, but this is unspent funds for the pretrial release program. This has been through FMS. Deidre's going to summarize this. We had some different ways we could go in FMS. It's not, I don't want to say it's an insignificant amount, but in considering the grand scheme of things, it's really a pretty small amount of money, but it's significant to courts. And the thought out of FMS was the biggest bang for our buck was the recommendation you're about to see. I'm going to let Deidre summarize that in detail. Deidre?
Thank you, Judge Conklin, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Deirdre Benedict. I'm a supervising analyst in our criminal justice office. And for those of you who may not be that familiar, the pretrial release program was first enacted in the Budget Act of 2021 and allows for an annual allocation provided to all courts. And it is for the timely, efficient, fair pretrial release of individuals booked into jail. This year, of 2025 included the first time language that allows us to reallocate funding the Judicial Council. And we brought this item to the TICBAC and to the Funding Methodology Subcommittee early last year. And you asked for us to conduct a mid-year survey to look at the courts and see their demonstrated need, as well as courts that would be willing to return funding. We did do that. We did that in mid-November. We put a survey out to all the courts. We received a number of responses, but I will say that 24 courts requested additional fund, and it resulted in a total ask of approximately $12.2 million. The amount that was offered to return was from one court in the amount of $194,000. So given the extreme amount of need versus the amount available to us, staff looked at those asks and first took an initial stab at looking at only those courts that had requested up to $194,000. And of those, we then evaluated to see, would there be a fair, equitable way to distribute this funding? And I know there was discussion at the Funding Methodology Subcommittee that sort of mirrored staff's discussions, and that we really wanted to find a way to let the small amount of funding have maximum impact. And the way we thought might make the most sense is to fund the smallest courts, that the smallest requests, up to the $194,000 that was available. If we do that, that will fund completely the requests of five courts and 55% of one court. And that recommendation is in your materials on page 28. We did consider other things, such as just simply dividing the 194 among those that had requested funding. It would result in about $8,000 given to each court. We did not think that would be very efficient or effective way to use those very scarce resources. We had discussion about going back to the courts and surveying them again, now that we knew that what 194,000 was what we were dealing with, but we're under very severe time constraints. This funding must be approved by the Judicial Council at their April meeting and then reallocated to the courts that received the funding by the end of this fiscal year. So I'm happy to answer any questions, or Judge Conklin, if there was anything else you wanted to add.
That was very effective, Deidre. Thank you. So as Deidre summarized, and as this went through FMS, our discussion, any other FMS member can chime in on this, but how do we make the most effective use of this? And not that $8,000 is not effective money for any court, but it's almost administratively costs more than you're going to get. The rationale behind this recommendation was we take those courts that we can absolutely fulfill their need and fulfill that need. Not out of disrespect for any other court's needs, but make a few whole versus give everybody a drop in the bucket. But that's just my perspective. Any questions for Deidre, any comments or concerns? This is for the recommendations, as Deidre said, at page 26. We're open for discussion. And I don't see any, so I will invite a motion if somebody feels so inclined.
Finke will move to approve the recommendation.
Chad, thank you very much.
Fleming seconds.
Who was that?
Fleming.
Very good. Thank you. Moved and seconded that the recommendation set forth at page 26 of your materials for the $194,000 in available pretrial funding be allocated as recommended. It's now for formal discussion. Any additional discussion? Seeing, hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion to approve the recommendation? Seeing, hearing none, I deem the recommendation as chair with Rebecca's agreement at page 26 to be unanimously approved. Thank you very much, Deidre, and for all the work that went into this. And I'll just, perhaps I'm commenting too much today, but these mid-year reallocations don't come without significant work. So I do thank staff for all the work they're doing, and I thank all the responding courts for the time they're taking. Because we have some courts that said we're not going to use the money this year, which I think increases our effectiveness and our transparency. So enough comment, enough said. But moving now to the next item, this is allocations for dependency council programs. Now, I want to highlight this by this is different than the ongoing discussion that FMS is having about an allocation methodology. And both advocacy and allocation related to dependency council funding and the need for that. This is essentially an annual step that we take concerning the distribution of funding from the collections program for court-appointed juvenile dependency council and reallocation of unspent funding. So it's a little bit of a combination of both, but it is not a new policy. It's not a new advocacy, it's just existing steps similar to what we just saw. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kelly. Kelly, are you with us?
I am. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Thanks. And members of the committee, as Judge Conklin indicated, for consideration, we have recommendations for two redistributions of funding for court-appointed juvenile dependency council. One is for the allocation of juvenile dependency council collections program funding, and the other for the reallocation of court-appointed dependency council funding for fiscal year 25-26. These allocations are brought before the council for consideration each year and are determined based on funding methodologies previously approved by the council. The first item for consideration is the allocation of $121,145 in juvenile dependency council collections program funds that were collected in fiscal year 24-25. With those proposed allocations detailed in attachment 4A on page 38 of your materials. And the second is the reallocation of $980,773 in expected unspent trial court funding for court-appointed dependency council for fiscal year 25-26. I do note that this amount includes $45,000 in available funds that were identified by courts through the regular mid-year reallocation process, and $935,773 in available funds remaining after the council allocated the court-appointed dependency council funds in September based on a court spending plan survey. Those proposed allocations are detailed at attachment 4B on page 39 of the materials, which concludes my presentation, and I am happy to answer any questions at this time. Thank you.
Kelly, thank you. Great job. So again, this is an important recommendation here, but it's not a change of policy. It's set forth at page 37 of the materials for those two amounts. And I'll open it up for any questions for Kelly or discussion before I ask for a motion. Seeing and hearing none, is there a motion to approve the recommendation set forth at page 37 of our materials?
So moved. This is David Slayton.
David, thank you so much. And I'm sorry, Jake, I see your hand up. Was that an old hand?
It was a late hand, so I could do it after there's a second. So
if you, it's fine. Okay. So that, I appreciate that. So let's just follow rules of order. It's been moved for approval. Is there a second to David Slayton's motion?
Bowen second.
Judge Bowen, thank you so much. So now moved and seconded that the recommendation be approved. That opens us up to formal discussion. Jake, I turn to you.
So I'm just looking at, sorry, I didn't lower my hand here, at attachment 4A, which is page 40 of the PDF. And I just wonder if it would be helpful to staff or too much work to include in the motion that if a court that it, if for staff to reach out to courts that are receiving $5,000 or less in reallocated funds to ask if those courts still are interested in receiving those funds, and if not, just have them allocated to the others that are receiving them. So just as an example, that's confusing. Yuba is listed here as receiving $719.13 in a reallocated set of funds. I'm just wondering whether that amount of money is useful at $719 and the amount of time that goes into revising IBAs, or for example, if they, and I'm not saying these courts don't want that money, but if they did, if they are getting less than $5,000, they might say, I really can't do anything with this. And there's a lot of effort that goes into that process. And if we modified the motion to just say, if a court said they did not ultimately want that reallocation, that staff could recalculate column H, removing those courts. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you for your question. And Mr. Chatters, as part of our process for the reallocation, once we determine eligibility, we do reach out to those courts who are eligible for the funding to ensure that they would like the funding and that they can expend it during the fiscal year.
Okay. And then if they say no, do you just allocate it to the other court?
What we do, we place it back in the pot for reallocation.
Okay.
For this year, yeah.
So good thought, Jake, and it sounds like they've already accommodated that. But that
I should have known that to be true.
Well, Kelly, I think that was Jake's shared comment by all of us. We appreciate your anticipation of that question, but that's a very effective way to ask the courts that are getting any amount of money, do you want to go through the effort or do you want to just go ahead and surrender it, so to speak? So Kelly's assured us that's part of the process. With that, we are now at the formal discussion stage, moved and seconded. Any additional comments or concerns about the recommendation at page 37? Seeing and hearing none, is there any opposition to the recommendation, the two-part recommendation set forth at page 37? Seeing and hearing none, I deem that recommendation along with Rebecca unanimously approved. Okay, we're making great progress, folks. This gets us to item 5, which is our BCCs. Now, for those of you that are new on the committee, and to remind everybody what we're dealing with here, we're in, and this is for my benefit, even though it's going to sound very simplistic. We're in fiscal year 25-26. We're halfway through the year. The governor's proposed budget that just came out last week considered BCPs for the fiscal year 26-27, which is going to begin in July of 26. We're long gone from that. These BCPs, these that will result in BCPs have recommended, are for 27-28. So that's how far ahead this committee works. We're now considering recommendations or proposals that will ultimately may land in the budget 2 years from now. So it's just keep those years straight. So what happened and the process that we're all aware of, and I want to take Rebecca and I want to take a minute to thank both Budget Services staff and everybody on this committee, because this is the rollout of a relatively new process. We have different ways we follow this up in the past. What we decided to do for the past few years is we assign each TICBAC member a liaison to 1, 2, and sometimes 3 courts, because our goal here, rather than invite all those courts into the meeting, to set forth their thoughts, which just turned out to be ineffective. We just couldn't get it done and ensure that they had a voice in this process. We reach out to them. They then provide their input to us. And then each of the members now, through the hard work of budget services and through the way that they've developed this process, submits it back to budget services. They compile the final survey results, and here we are. So you have those final survey. It's the last page of your materials at page 45 of 45. And this is the funding priorities that, as the state trial courts throughout the state have asked us to consider. Now, timing's everything. So by way of suggestion, since this survey went out, the governor has now come out with the initial proposed budget, which did not include a hoped for BCP addressing court interpreters. So as a suggestion, beyond the whatever number of BCPs that is tick back we want to propose to put forward, and what this happens is these filter through JBBC. So different entities, different advisory committees submit their recommendations, including TICBAC. It goes to JBBC. JBBC then does their work, and they make the final determination as to these recommendations that will move forward for the 27-28 budget cycle. But again, noting that since we did all this work, the most current budget did not include a BCP for court interpreter services and additional funding, that I would suggest is something we also consider. But Rebecca, I don't know if you want to add anything to this. As far as moving forward, we've still got Zlatko here, even though he has to get moving pretty quickly. We want to obviously recognize these are all important, but we've also learned that if we just throw everything against the wall to see what sticks, nothing sticks. So we really try to be as effective with our recommendations as possible. Rebecca, your thoughts?
I think you've covered all of it. I do really want to underscore that this is the first year in my recollection that we truly did receive responses from every single court. And so this is really kind of a historic moment for this kind of a data collection. And I applaud the committee and the staff, but, it really is all inclusive this year. And so it feels good to know that we don't have any outliers that, perhaps we didn't touch base with. So,
yeah, I should have mentioned that, because that's our goal here is to make sure everybody's heard, and we heard from 100%. And to you, all of you, thank you, because I don't think I had to knock on anybody's door about a late response. Maria might be able to correct me, and if so, don't name who that was. But even though it took perhaps a little bit of a few reminders, you all did the work necessary to get these recommendations in. So thank you. With that, I do see David Slayton's hand up. David?
Thank you, Judge Conklin and Rebecca. And first of all, just to the process, thank you for this process that you've put in place. I think as a member of this committee, it's so helpful to see what the sort of group feeling is amongst the various courts. And it, I think, makes this decision-making a lot easier. Just a couple of comments based upon my read of this. And I think one of them was a little bit surprising at first, but maybe I understand it even more. Obviously what I did was I took all priority ones and gave it 3 points, all priority twos gave it 2 points, all priority threes and gave it 1 point, just so I could sort of see how these would rank, because sometimes it's kind of hard to see that. And the order that I got from that was the number one priority was CPI by far, inflationary adjustment by far, followed by technology, then equity, then courthouse construction, and then self-help funding. Inflationary adjustment didn't surprise me. And certainly I would be supportive of that. When I saw the technology funding, I wasn't completely surprised by that, but it made me sort of start thinking about it. And I know one of the things that the technology committee of the council is looking at is the area of cybersecurity funding. And Kate and I were talking as chairs of SEAC, chair and vice chair of SEAC, that, a lot of our sister courts are really worried about how they're going to fund cybersecurity needs. And so I think that's part of a broader need for technology funding. So I was excited to see that's on there, and I hope we can support that. Certainly, to your last thing I'll say, other than the other three seem to be worthwhile in the funding. I'm not sure how many we're going to submit, but I just sort of linked it to top five. But I agree with you, Judge Conklin, that the court interpreter funding situation is getting pretty dire. And if we don't start getting some funding for that, it's going to result in some difficult choices in figuring out how we're going to fund that. If there's, you know, I didn't say it earlier because I knew I was going to say it here, that reallocation that we just recommended, at least I think for all the courts, at least for ours, it's true, is necessary to cover the cost of doing business today. So without that reallocation, we can't cover our payroll, at least here in LA, of interpreters. And so when the fund balance hits zero, that becomes very concerning, because that doesn't, that money is reallocated. My understanding is it's a one-time reallocation. The numbers get, it's a three-year average, gets reallocated next year. We will be short again next year. And when there's no funding in the fund balance to cover that need, I think it's a really difficult thing for something that we all agree and understand is an absolutely essential thing that we provide as a service and a constitutional obligation we have to provide interpreters. But if there's no funding for it, it puts all of us in a bit of a bind. And so I do hope, even though at least in my calculation, it doesn't make the top of the list, I certainly would advocate and hope that it would be included as part of our priorities submitted to JBBC. Thank you.
David, thank you. Chad?
I echo what David just said. I will say interpreters was not part of our court's top three, only I think because of a hope that we wouldn't need to, because of a hope that it would come through this time. But I went back to the item on interpreters, and if I did the math right, it looks like 37 of the 58 courts needed additional funding. So, I mean, I think that shows it is a persistent problem across the state. And I know there is a group of CEOs, myself included, who are sort of trying to work on ways to try to make some improvements around the contract interpreter issues. But at the end of the day, as David pointed out, I mean, it is sort of an access to justice thing, right? I mean, if we get a request from a courtroom for an interpreter, you know, we only have so much latitude to say, well, no, because of money. You know, I mean, if somebody needs a very expensive exotic interpreter, you know, for a felony prelim or whatever, you know, we got to do it, right? It's the cost of doing business. It's an access to justice thing. So I think I would also support that we kind of keep that in the forefront, because I would like the legislature and the governor to realize that, like, that is a really large cost over which, you know, we don't have a ton of control over the inputs.
Yeah, I'm the least mathematical of any of you, and I typically advocate the CEOs are the brains behind the business here. But what concerns me is there's not a BCP in the 26-27 budget that just came out. Next year, the court interpreter funds, as David Slayton just said, may be, the bucket may be empty, which means you have to find another way to try to pay for those. So now we're talking about 27-28. So our advocacy may be strengthened only out of the emergency of the lack of funds. So I'm joining in the thought that we also consider that as a BCP. Chris Rule, I'm going to obviously acknowledge your presence as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. And just from the process that I just went through with the two courts I reached out to, I think there may not be a good, strong collective understanding among all trial courts about the potential dire nature of the situation with the interpreter funding. I think part of, you know, what I did, I convened a meeting, we discussed this, and I think part of what informed the decision-making, the prioritization, was an assumption, which may be wrong, that the JCC Court Interpreter Program was already putting forth a BCP separately to fill this gap, to keep the interpreter funding solvent. And I think if we had not been operating under that assumption, we likely would have prioritized it higher.
I think it's a
valid. And I agree with all the other comments that have been made about prioritizing the interpreter funding.
Thanks, Chris. Rebecca?
So I echo what my colleagues have said about the interpreters. It is a serious situation, as serious, if not more serious than the court reporters, I believe. We are kind of headed for that cliff, and there are not a lot of solutions out there for us. So I too would include the interpreters, and I appreciate both Zlatko and Douglas bringing this to our attention that, hey, you may want to go ahead and slip this in, even though it wasn't something on everybody's radar through the assumption of it being already addressed, but it does need to be put in there. The other comment I'd like to make is on equity, and that is that I think that we all support equity across the courts, but I'm not sure that the way we have been demonstrating the need is working. And that's for another day, another conversation. But I do believe the technology requests, and I heard more in, I think David's right, cybersecurity is one, but I think also licensing for softwares that we all have, whether whatever case management system or jury system or whatever you have, we all have them. And simply by funding that, it makes us equitable because then we all have our licenses funded. And so I think there's some other ways to take a bite at this equitable item that may be a little bit more illustrative to the legislature about how they can help us move forward as a whole. And so I would like, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, I think our colleagues have spoken, you know, it was very evident that this is something on many people's minds. And so I think that is a really eye-opening conversation. So I other than that, I support everything else everybody has said. Thank you.
Thanks. So Jake, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to talk about two items. So the inflationary item clearly is, you know, right there at the top, which makes a lot of sense to me. On the technical or the technology one, I would, for me, I look at this at a bigger view, right? We can look at it from a cybersecurity standpoint, and I think that that's correct, and I think we want to go that route. That there are very, you know, that technology is not inexpensive, and the resources that you need to really support that in an effective way are not inexpensive from a staffing standpoint. And those are things that really are important to us. And I think we should focus on that area. But secondarily to that, you know, these technology improvements we've made over the past 5 years in particular, we've addressed a lot of the infrastructure costs of those for remote appearances and others. But there is, you know, what we really haven't done is said as a complement for the courts, there is a staffing element to effectively support those functions. And so a little bit to Rebecca's point, I think that is an equity element in addition. And I think there are ways to look at technology beyond we need to buy computers and we need to buy software, but there is a staffing element that not all courts can afford, partly because for, you know, obviously depending on your size, one, difficult to justify taking, you know, spending $300,000 on a single very expensive IT position or something. So I would encourage us as we look at that as a concept to be sort of a more inclusive thought about technology and what that means to us. So that's my thought there. The other, which also lends to equity, and I will say this one is a little more local, so I'll acknowledge my local bias on this one. That is that judgeships was not listed as one of the options. No, our court did submit that. There's only one court and it was us, but I'll say that. And I just reflect on that as the fastest growing county in California. You know, we are concerned about what that means for our constituents here. And the way we have allocated, this is an assumption, but the way we have allocated staff dollars that come along with those judgeships has been to go across all courts, not just those that receive judgeships, based on how we've done allocations in the past. So in some way, you know, advocating for judgeships, while it helps those courts that get the judge, the staffing complement ends up, as we've allocated in the past, benefiting everybody. So there is a little bit of an equity element there. So I just throw that out there. So I just offer those couple of thoughts. And the interpreter one makes sense to me. So I would be supportive of that as well.
Appreciate that. Kim, I can't see you, but your hand is up. Kim Turner,
do you want to comment? There you go. I turned on my camera for you.
There you go. Hey, thanks. Always good to see you. What's up?
So I just wanted to go back
for a moment to Rebecca's earlier comments about funding for licensing for our case management systems. And I'm the chair of the CEOs that are on the Tyler Technologies case management system, Enterprise Justice. There are about 30 courts that are using that particular technology. And you know, there's a big push, I'm sure it's not just at Tyler, but probably at eCourt, probably at all the other vendors, to go to a cloud-based solution, which I think especially for our small courts is a wonderful idea, not only because it will you know, make it possible for them to not have to stand up an on-premises server farm and whatever you need in order to keep your technology, your case management system running, but also because you get the added benefit of having a fully, you know, sophisticated 24/7 cybersecurity shop when you're in a big cloud environment like AWS. So cybersecurity, I don't want to minimize how important that is because it certainly is extremely important. But I think one of the challenges for courts that are trying to get off of these on-premises solutions and get into a cloud-based solution, a software as a service, SaaS setup, is that you know, the price tag is just very high. So I really think that there is an opportunity from an equity perspective, but also from a good strategic forward-looking vision for the branch, certainly for the small courts, small, medium courts, maybe even for the larger courts. Rebecca recently went to a SaaS solution in Santa Clara, which is, you know, she's a very large court, to try to look at licensing as an opportunity to try to level the playing field for all these courts and make it possible for courts to move to the next generation of how their technology is going to work, which is in many cases a SaaS environment. So, and you get the added byproduct benefit of getting better cybersecurity, at least for your case management system. Obviously, courts have lots of other systems which they still need to protect and what have you. But if you've gone Microsoft 365, you know, you're up in the cloud with all of your Microsoft products. If you're up in the cloud with your case management system, those are probably two of the biggest heavy hitters in a court. And so I think there's some, you know, economies that come from those kinds of strategic moves.
Excellent, Kim, thank you. So I don't wanna dissuade anybody from making additional comments, but I also recognize we're getting close to 1:15 and we want to try to get this wrapped up in the next few minutes. So just to sort of maybe get us further on in the discussion as a suggestion only, so I'm not making a motion yet, but it appears that we all recognize that, I can't stop that. It appears that we all recognize the CPI, the inflationary adjustment, far and away is top of the list. If we follow David Slayton's numbers and just the raw numbers, the next one that everybody appears to also be pretty consistent with is technology. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to have to set some parameters or framework there about what would be included in that. And then while Jake, I appreciate your comments about equity, the numbers weren't there. And candidly, the information we get is that equity is not something currently that has the interest of the administration. I don't know how else to put it. But I think your thoughts are very valid concerning especially judgeships. But the third then would be, as we've all recognized, the court interpreters. So I don't believe we rank these initially, but just to start the discussion, CPI, inflationary, technology with a brief discussion about the parameters of that, and court interpreters. Rebecca?
Judge Conklin, it's my recollection that we don't rank them anyway.
Right. Good.
Yes. Okay. Good.
Okay.
That's correct.
Any thoughts on those three? Again, recognizing that, and I'm just speaking for myself, but I think interpreters has taken on a new life. And I think if we give much more than three recommendations, we then start to detract from what we are recommending. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do anything to put that court interpreter recommendation to create, to dilute it. David Slayton?
Judge Conklin, I'll be happy to make that motion if you don't make it whenever ready. I just want to say I think this is a really good approach because, you know, based upon conversations that are happening in lots of places, it seems as if we can make a specific case to the Department of Finance and the legislature about why this money is so important to continuing operations or improving operations, we have a lot better ability to make that case. So to the point earlier, it's hard to make that case with equity. We all agree equity is important, and we've got to do everything we can from this committee to try to advocate that direction. But it seems as if that's a hard case to make, and we've not been successful year after year, recently at least, in making that. But I think it's easy to make a case for why CPI is funding. And I was so glad to hear Zlatko say that LAO didn't even recognize that as discretionary, which is, I think, how we view it, which is we got these cost increases we have to make. So that's nice. And so I think there's an easy case to make with that. I think with making, keeping it limited to a couple, making a very specific case about technology and why that's so important. There's increasing demand from our constituents that's necessary, and there's risk if we don't do it, as well as interpreter. I just think it's a very solid recommendation, and certainly I will be happy to support that at whatever the appropriate time is.
Okay, so I appreciate that. So I'm going to show that David Slayton is on the on-deck circle for making the motion, but is there any discussion, either David or anybody or Rebecca, as far as the parameters of the court technology ask? Rebecca?
Well, I would respectfully offer to David's motion, perhaps the parameters include cybersecurity, case management licensing, and associated staffing.
So didn't raise my hand, but just a question. So in our survey, we said, including IT modernization, equipment purchases, staff support, licensing, and infrastructure, which I think would cover everything you said, Rebecca. So I wonder whether or not that's too broad. Are we wanting to narrow it, or would that be sufficient to cover the issues? Because it would include cybersecurity, it would include case management, staff, all those types of things, unless other people feel differently.
Zlatko, does that give your staff the focus they need?
Yeah, I'm glad that David is here in his capacity as not only a representative and member of TICBAC, but also in his capacity as on the technology committee. And I know that they're looking at specific items. So I would say is, if there's things that the tech committee is already considering in items that are coming forward, that there's not an overlap, this could be a supplement coming from TICBAC to items that the tech committee will eventually have to consider when we do the cross committee references, those items coming from tech to TICBAC and TICBAC's items that are relevant going there. So if there is overlap, it might be good just for our friends, John Yee and his team, who would be writing this concept, giving them the parameters of a proposal different than what is being considered by tech. Because it wouldn't make sense to have overlap. And we could obviously raise our hands and say, yes, cybersecurity is important. I believe that's something that's going forward for consideration by the tech committee. Is that right, David?
So there's a lot of discussion going on amongst the tech committee about our BCCs. We have a meeting tomorrow, and then we'll have an internal chair meeting tomorrow. We'll talk about it. But I know John's on the call. I'm glad he's here because this discussion has been really helpful to inform what the technology committee is going to ultimately submit. But there is, we had a public meeting on Monday. Cybersecurity was on there as a proposal, so I suspect that one would go on there. But the other things that have been discussed today were not specifically on there. So with regard to licensing and support costs for CMS, migrating to the cloud, staff to support some of those functions. So I do think this is actually really helpful as technology considers. My perspective is this conversation is really helpful for helping us put together a package jointly in some ways that can be presented to JBBC as effectively as possible to move this forward. So,
Okay. So I see Kim, Jake, and Rebecca. I want to get to those, just reminding everybody it's 1:20. Kim Turner?
So I'll be quick. So I just, I appreciate that David thinks that the list that's included under the technology, all these different topical areas, kind of covers it. But I think it's actually kind of important to have a little more specificity that we're talking about CMS licensing, that we're talking about, you know, migration to the cloud for on-prem courts, that we're talking about cybersecurity as it relates to, you know, whatever isn't covered in a cloud environment, et cetera. Just because I think what Zlatko said better than I'm going to say now is that, you know, we have a lot of lanes all kind of converging with the same topical areas. It'd be nice for us to say the things that we're really concerned about is a more discreetly identified list than just an amorphous, you know, IT, which is a great big huge umbrella with a lot of stuff in it. So that's just my thought.
And I want to support Kim. I know that there's other hands up, but from a presentation to not only our internal folks, but assuming that this gets to the Department of Finance, they're going to look at the IT modernization and say, well, you have $12.5 million of undefined funding. And so it'll be critical that we can express the specific needs here and how those resources are differentiated.
I agree.
It can't be again another, just give us $50 million more dollars. That will fall flat. And we also need to then drive our business case as to why these are critical. And absence of sort of a narrowing of those needs, it will be impossible to convince them to give us another bucket of resources. It has to be specific. And
I think it'll be easy to do that too, Zlatko.
Yeah, I
discreetly identified, you know, topical area. We can find out what those licensing costs are for 58 courts and add that number up. I mean, it's easy to do that.
Great. Rebecca and then Jake.
I think Jake was up before I was.
Jake, then Rebecca.
You're muted. I lowered my hand and not unmute. Thank you. Thanks, Rebecca, for deferring. So a couple of things. I think narrowing to some concepts is good. You know, cybersecurity, I think if we want to talk about next generation licensing, that's fine. I would caution us, and I guess I would express disagreement about it being whether or not a court has decided to be on premises or the cloud. I mean, there's licensing costs, how that court decides to do it is not something we've traditionally gotten into. So that licensing cost component makes sense. But I do want to stress that I think for Zlatko, for your purpose, and maybe as the tech committee looks at it, the modernization fund, at least as we use it, and I think as it was intended, is about that exact thing. You're implementing something new, you are moving the branch forward and your court forward on some new technology. What we're talking about is the ongoing increase in IT-related operating costs. So it is more expensive to run IT today than it was before. That's the element we're trying to get to, the staff to support cybersecurity, the staff to support enhanced access to justice through remote proceedings and other technologies. So I think that should be the focus. I will channel some of our colleagues on the court exec side to say, also being clear that this is trial court request for ongoing technology funding and staffing. So I would just add that as a clarification.
Thanks, Jake. Rebecca?
So just two things. I agree with David Slayton in that I think that these requests should be joint requests. I do not think that they should be coming from either ITAC or TICBAC, because for one thing, I think we have a responsibility to the courts who did respond to kind of shepherd this all the way through. And it would seem to me that it would be more compelling that we have multiple points of contact with the courts that are supporting these efforts. You know, and with that, I think we have a very deliberate process in TICBAC that we've reached out and we've gathered that information. My second point is, and with no disrespect, Zlatko, but mod funds are not foundational to the court's budget. They are lucky to have if you get them. And they have no ongoing support if you happen to use them for something to modernize with. And so you have to find those pennies to support that effort that you may have had the chance to get in the first place. And that is no disrespect to the mod fund. It is a good fund, but we have no foundational support for technology. And that includes the 2% fund, because that cannot fund staff. And so I would say that, you know, what we're asking for is a layer of equity among the courts to operate the very foundational pieces of equipment that we have, whether it be cybersecurity, whether it be case management systems, whether it be on-prem or in the cloud. And frankly, I think even some of that adds itself to the cybersecurity because you have those extra vendors that assist you. So again, no disrespect to my colleagues here, but I do think that we have to keep everything in the category that it is actually utilized in. And mod funds and 2% funds are not foundational operating budgets.
So we're really close to the end, folks, and I want to keep us all at 1:30. Those are all very valid thoughts. I'm going to join in Rebecca's perspective that I think we need to recognize here that these are trial court interests. If ITAC wants to move forward with similar ones or their own, more power to them. But I don't want to get in the habit of deferring to another recommendation to the detriment of the trial courts. Also reminding you that JBBC serves that function. So when it gets to JBBC, they can start to tailor these when they make their final recommendations. But with that, I think we appear to be as a group agreeing that without ranking, CPI or inflationary interpreters, and then the final language for the technology. Now, one thought would be that we could defer to staff to finalize that, recognizing that the licensing, the cybersecurity, the other things listed in the stated that with the questions asked of the courts, including staff licensing, infrastructure, and modernization. So David Slayton, you would volunteer to make a motion. Are you doing that?
I'm happy to make that motion, just as you stated, that the three top would be inflationary adjustment, technology, and interpreters. And we would defer to staff to capture the comments that we've made today with regard to the technology item.
Turner seconds.
Move and seconded with an emphasis to staff that we want our voice to be heard. It can supplement ITAC, but we have our own message to convey concerning the BCPs. So it's moved and seconded. Does Maria and Zlatko, does that give you the language you need to move forward with this?
I think so. It's good that we have John Yee here listening to this too, as it'll be important that he can pull that together.
Great.
And and it's an evolutionary process, and you know, there's a lot happening, and so this will, if needed, we can return to the committee with questions for sure.
Great suggestion. All right, moved and seconded that those three go forward without ranking. Pardon me. Any further discussion on that? Is there any opposition to the motion set forth by David and seconded by, was it Kim Turner?
Yes. Whoever,
that the recommendations move forward to JBBC on schedule. Hearing none, I'll deem those unanimously approved. It's 1:28. You can all now get back to your day jobs. I appreciate that so very much. Maria, when's our next JBBC meeting?
February 19th.
February 19th.
Yes.
Also, I'm not sure I acknowledged before I'd welcomed our new members, but Maria, thank you very much. Maria jumped into the fray to sort of help us transition, given some staff movement. And Maria has more than fulfilled that role and is now being relieved. And so is now going back to about 1.5% work versus 2% for 150% versus 200% of work. And Maria, thank you very much for that effort. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And with that, I've got 30 seconds left. So here it comes. Go Dodgers. We're getting there. Thanks, folks. I really appreciate everybody's input. Thank you so much. And Zlatko to you and Steph.
Thanks, Judge.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.